Morning, everybody.
Good morning. Hey, Kathleen.
It's just another manic Monday.
Just another manic Monday. Hey, I don't know if you saw, you know, that picture of the robot birds taking pictures of monarch butterflies.
What?
Yeah.
Is this? Yeah. Is this real or is this conspiracy real?
No, this is like real, real. Yeah.
Birds. You know what? I thought the world was shitty, but no, I'm not so sure.
Birds. Yeah, look it up. Birds are not real. There's a tiny robot hummingbird that can get close to the swarm of monarch butterflies and take pictures of it.
How do we know, Dan, that we're not robots?
You know, we don't. Actually, that's sort of the
deeper existential
that's the deeper I mean, we just could be computer code too.
Well, and then there's Elon Musk and these folks that think the funny thing about these, like, this is totally aside, but you know, lots of these Silicon Valley
Gus has seen it. Gus, could you put it in the transmission library, will you?
You know, a lot of these folks think we're in a computer program and God's like some sort of programmer. That's reasonable to wonder about that. It's not that different than Descartes wondering if we're in like the fantasy or dream of a demon. But the thing that I don't get is how they think, you know, we can develop a way to find out and exit this program. I'm like, that's where you lose me. There's no way if we're a program, we're not Agent Smith.
Well, how do you know? Maybe we are.
Okay. Well, I won't live to see it.
No.
anyways, we started off with a tangent and now.
Yep.
And our regular way of segueing is to share our names and who we are. So I'm Mark Van Stunek. I direct the Center for Prophetic Imagination.
And I'm Daniel Wolpert. I direct MICA, the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing. Gretchen has a great question. Why they wouldn't make it look like a butterfly?
Probably camera size. Birds are bigger, so they can have more of a camera in there than a...
I don't know.
It's a giant butterfly. That would scare the hell out of the butterfly. Gretchen also, the programmer that programmed all this has been drunk lately.
Yeah. Quite possibly, or on some other drugs or worse. I don't know. Drunk after a while, it would just be mellow. I'm concerned they're on, you know, meth.
Do you remember back in the day when there was like a defrag program in Windows? I don't know if you ever did that, and you could actually watch your computer. And sometimes I'd watch that for a half hour and it'd be transfixed.
Wow.
I'm wondering if that's what we're in now. This pandemic is the defrag.
It's the defrag. Well, but that means it's going to get better at some point, right?
When it's done.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm hoping
for. Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to that.
anyways.
Okay. Unity. this keeps going. Steven's got a good thought.
The first prototype, a giant, terrifying robot butterfly, didn't perform well in the surreptitious test audiences. The screaming hordes were a nuance.
And yeah, nuisance, I think it's supposed to be.
Is that what I say?
You said nuance.
Oh, yeah, nuisance.
Yeah. All right. So we've been hearing a lot about the U word, unity.
Mm-hmm. Unity.
It's
a great idea.
It's a great idea. Yeah, it's a great idea. And we thought we would look at this not just because this has become so popular within political circles, but you know, this is a big thing in church circles too, right? I mean, this is the constant discussion in church circles, and it particularly comes up when a denomination is getting ready to split. Mm-hmm. And everybody's like, oh, you know, unity is so important, we can't split, which I always find really funny for a Protestant denomination to be talking about. I'm like, if you're really so concerned about unity, like, wouldn't you just become Roman Catholic again?
Yeah, it's like 1, 2, 3, not it. Like, it's unity now, but not before.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, there's so many layers of it, right? So this is also happening in Protestant denominations that only came back together again in the 1970s and 80s because they had split over slavery in the 1840s and 50s. Right? So this is the thing, right? Unity is this weird, elusive dream, you know, that we all have, right? It's, you know, it's the subject of that, you know, great Coke commercial that was really popular for a long time. Yep.
The one from the end of Mad Men, like, I want to teach the world to sing.
Right. Yeah. You know, and you've got all the people like on the roof all singing together and, you know, they're all happy. And I mean, we have this very almost primordial impulse of, you know, it's the Rodney King thing. Why can't we all just get along? Right. You know, it seems like this very funny, you know, kind of card that people pull out whenever they need or want something, you know, particularly when one group is on seemingly a losing side. They're like, well, what about unity? And
you know, this is interesting. You brought up, you know, he hinted at this idea that this is kind of baked into us. So like we're, I think we evolved to be cooperative creatures. Mm-hmm. And so unity is something we would instinctively want. We want a tranquil, agreeable community of support, mutual aid, and trust. So that's great. Now, the issue is this is where we get myths and, you know, principalities and powers come in. Like, so it just so happens that the dominant group will have their own mythologies around what a good society is. And so they evoke that.
Right.
It's so like right now, if Trump supporters and Biden supporters came together, people think we have unity. Never mind the fact like those Latin American immigrants are not included in the definition of unity. Like there's always losers in our definition of unity. So the question is always unity between who and who.
Yeah.
So like, Right now, like when Black Lives Matter was protesting, people say they're just so divisive. Right. They're bringing division and polarization to this community, which we've talked about polarization. We were polarized before. Somehow when a police officer shoots an unarmed black man, or, you know, all the other myriad ways that black people are killed, mm-hmm. that's not disunity. That's not polarization.
Right.
It's what people take to the streets. That's like when it upsets the dominant narrative.
Right.
That's when it becomes disunity.
Yeah. And see, I mean, to me, the big conundrum in this, and this is what I really fail to hear over and over again in these conversations, is that there is never a merging or an overlapping analysis of unity and power, mm-hmm. which is, I think, what you're getting at, right? That the dominant narrative is done by the powerful to define everything. And then the dominant narrative and the powerful people just say, well, unity is you all just doing what I want, right? And if everybody would be just like us, whatever the us is, then everything would be fine and we would have unity.
Yeah. And this is the thing with one of the reasons why it's hard for us in our society, generally speaking, to see power is because it's tied into all these other little myths. Like one is intention, right? So let's just assume Biden has the best of intentions in his calling for unities. And I have no doubt. Like, I don't think he's a sinister, power-hungry man. Maybe he is, but it's irrelevant. Mm-hmm. His intentions are irrelevant. Like, because the thing, most people in our society are conditioned in mostly the same ways, and so have a generally shared common sense that might just be wrong. This is one of the insights of liberation theology and other movements or critical theory, is to say, okay, let's take the people who are on the, get the short end of the stick and see what their analysis is.
What they think.
And see, maybe we're missing something on the dominant analysis. And so this idea of power, like that move makes all kinds of sense unless you think this whole thing is common sense and good. And then this dissenting thing, it's one of the big problems in religious communities, but intentional communities in particular, I see this, where there's such, it has to be a tight definition of who we are. Mm-hmm. What ends up being the superordinate kind of purpose is unity, right? Mm-hmm. We have to do this together. Right. And so what that means is there's almost always a squashing of dissent and a hiding of problems. Like right. It's been big cases, and churches are like this all the time. The Catholic yeah. Church with the sex scandals, the molestation stuff, like all this stuff is like, it's not because people are just evil and they want to hide bad things. It's because they have this instinct to keep it all together because it somehow seems better than it falling apart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, you know, one of the things that you notice, if you go like to a church or an intentional community website, you know, and I've used this example for years, in this discussion, is there'll always be some page, you know, what we believe.
Yeah.
Right. Which is some kind of, you know, statement of faith or theology or whatever. And, you know, the assumption behind that, when you say what we believe, right, is that everybody who is a part of that church or that community believes those things, which, you know, on the face of it, you know, is not true. But then it also is essentially saying, if you don't believe those things, we can't really have unity with you. Right? And so this is where immediately as human beings in communities, tribes, nation states, whatever, we are continually dividing up and parsing up reality, while at the same time saying, well, let's have unity. Right? And this is the conundrum.
Well, and then people, and you can't really get away from it.
Right.
So the solution of saying, well, let's just not have that. Let's not have statements that we can objectively look outside of. Like, there's a reason mission statements and things exist and creeds. They're not all, it's not all bad.
Right.
It's saying, like, let's look at this outside of ourselves, and we need to have something to call each other to that's either aspirational or set some sort of boundaries. Mm-hmm. So we know what we're trying to do. And so then someone says, like, well, that stifles like dissent, which is true. It's unavoidably true. They say, well, let's just get rid of it. Yep. And then what happens is, and you see this in anarchist spaces all the time, is then there's these unwritten, unstated things that dominate.
Right.
That no one ever knows. And it actually is worse than if you had it written out and had a creed, because then all of a sudden you see these like people just use manipulation and power and then say, I'm just sharing my opinion. Like, you see this all the time. And so mm-hmm. To me, the goal of this isn't to figure out how to have the perfect unity. It's to have, like, how to have honesty and have integrity about what makes it work. Like, what are our values? What's really being reflected in how we go about this unity? If the Mennonite Church, for example, says it wants unity amongst disagreement, don't just say it like that. Say, we think people who don't feel like homosexuality is right, and people who think it's just fine, we'd rather have those two people agree than homosexual people feel really comfortable here. Just say it. Just say it. Right. That's what you're doing when you do this sort of move.
Yeah.
Don't be a deceitful. Don't use unity as some sort of like obscuring tactic.
Mm-hmm. All right. We got some comments. We'll come back to all of that.
Okay. So the noise of the motors sounds like a hummingbird, not a butterfly. You can watch it here. So there's a practical thing. It sounds like a hummingbird. So let's make it look like a bird. Fair enough.
Do you think the butterflies would care?
I don't know. We can't. How do we ask them? See, Carrots, the program command prompt is Unity. It's used to quell people of color. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The U word. That's great. We'll only refer to it as such now. Starting good trend. Yeah. Lots of agreement there. Sirius writes, how can there be unity if people are, one, they don't recognize the fact that we are interconnected, and two, are not willing to be frank about our roles, commitments, and responsibilities to each other on the earth?
Yeah. Well, and that second point is what you were just talking about, Mark. You know, this honesty piece. Right. And then the first point is an interesting one, because and this is sometimes one of the funny things about these different issues, right, is that we talk around something that is central to the concept that we're dealing with. So in terms of unity, on one level, we could say, well, we actually are unified already, right? We live on this planet. We're all carbon-based life. We all die and decompose and get recirculated. We're totally interdependent on each other, on robot birds, on butterflies, on everything else. So there already is unity, right? There already is unity. And in fact, our disunity is a perception that we continually create and recreate with the human ego self. Mm-hmm. And so in many ways, we're continually fighting to supposedly get back to something that we don't want to start out acknowledging exists already.
Yeah, and this is interesting. So to me, this is where, like, I'm thinking about, you know, within Buddhism, it's kind of big. It's like this, it's a central idea. Not that it... And Westerners love to idealize Buddhists as somehow like kindly people who never go to war, which isn't true at all. But you can see how in Buddhism there's this acknowledgement, like that I am not distinct from this person over there. Mm-hmm. We are one. Christianity, we have a practice called the communion or Eucharist that's supposed to get at that. But then think about how it's been eroded. It's a great example of how the concept of unity has been eroded. Because it used to be, you read about the Apostle Paul talking about this, like when, if rich people are eating and then the poor people show up from working in the fields and there's no food left, yet you're still doing this, you're eating at the table of demons, not of our Lord, right? So there's this strong sense of mutual aid and community baked into this central practice. Nowadays, wait, you can't eat that little tiny sad piece of bread unless you believe this document here that was created in 312 at the first council of Nicaea. I'm like, what the hell happened?
Yeah, first of all, the bread turned into styrofoam. I think that was the first bad move right there.
I mean, here's the thing. We all know instinctively that the bigger the celebration, the better the food. We all know this. Right. But for some reason, communion must be the least important celebration ever, because that is not good food. Susan writes that the United Methodist Church is splitting over the LGBTQ issue. Locally, a new version, Hope Church, that is fully inclusive to LGBTQ persons, has been in operation for a few years already. So some mainline people don't believe in unity at all costs. And this is the thing, like, the fact that this is called splitting instead of unity, when really it's like some of the United Methodists are saying we need to have unity with LGBTQ people, but that's not how it's framed. It's framed as a split, as though it's breaking of unity, which in a way institutionally that's true. But you can just even see the way it's framed, like how it's assuming who gets to set the terms of what unity is.
Yeah. Well, right, and so that's where you cycle back to the power piece and how part of the problem of the way we talk about unity has to do with the issue of these particulars, mm-hmm. right? So that, you know, and the LGBTQ issue in churches is a great example of this. I mean, I used to talk all the time before the PCUSA settled this out, how, you know, for years you would have at a presbytery meeting, let's say, you know, have the same group of people get up, you know, one on the pro side, one on the con side. They say their same arguments, the same thing. And the only thing that was changing is that the people on the panel were getting older. Right? So that as time went on, you know, they would just have more gray hair and stuff like that. But basically, you know, no minds got changed. And, you know, because at the end of the day, right, there is always some particular, right? Can we have a gay marriage in this church or not? Right. And so we either have to have it or not have it. Right. We can't have, you know, Schrodinger's gay wedding. there is a gay wedding and there isn't a gay wedding at the same time. And so this is where I think this concept of unity that we have in our minds, which is so linked to power, you know, really hits the wall. Because so what do? If you can't stand having a gay wedding at your church, then you either have to be at your church and not stand it, or not be at your church, right? And so this, you know, the if we don't analyze power, and if we don't say, well, maybe one of the real linchpins in this whole unity thing is that I have to be willing to give up power. Right? I have to be willing to give up power. Because at some point, I'm going to disagree with somebody else about something. And, you know, maybe it's a little thing as much as a big thing. You know, I don't like the American flag in front of my church. You know, I don't like those nasty little cookies that you serve at coffee time. Right? So what do we do about that in relation to this issue of unity? And that's a, you know, it's a very serious challenge.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's really comes down to what sort of community are we? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And who gets to say?
Right.
Sirius writes, plus calls for unity often has cultic dynamic vibes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a power piece. Yeah.
Kathleen writes, I think it's so funny that the United Methodist Church was totally prepared to split and the pandemic forced us to cancel the meeting.
Yeah, that is absolutely hilarious. You must stay together for another year.
The Lord has spoken. So I didn't know the Methodists were the reason for the pandemic. Now I know. It's their fault. Yeah. The what we believe statements are often highly open to interpretation, too. The Catechism, for example, is often taken as the final word, but it, too, is interpretable.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Right.
Well, and most of these, like, it's interesting. Some of these are intentionally that way, right? Because mm-hmm. We don't want to, like, bake it in. And some communities have statements of who we are that are based upon practices. Some that are based upon beliefs, and it gets all very messy because, like, how many times, like, when I had to become a Mennonite pastor, which I'm not currently, they had to say, "What do you do with a statement of faith?" And I said, "Well, I acknowledge it, but I don't affirm it." Like that, you get into these sort of like nuanced words, like, "Is it okay if I just acknowledge it and then mm-hmm. I uphold it, or do I have to believe it and affirm it?" And so, like, every seminarian at an evangelical school who has to, like, sign off on a statement of faith that they don't agree with or write their mission statement, like, has to go through this sort of interesting mental gymnastics to somehow say, I belong, but not exactly. It's right. Funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
Susan writes, I wish I could think how to say this succinctly. The communion ritual and rules around who can partake, I began to feel very uncomfortable with the mandate. If you believe X and X, okay to partake. If not, not welcome. Unity as far as condoning all behaviors is another level of accountability to each other. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Don writes, is unity something to which we should aspire?
Yeah, which is a great question. And it also, to me, that question gets to another very important piece of this conversation, which is that really there are all these different layers to this idea of unity that we are not very good at getting at, right? So, in a society, for example, there's a level of unity that I would call just very functional, right? So for example, we all have to have unity around the idea that a red light means stop and a green light means go. If we did not have unity around that, we couldn't drive anywhere. Right? You know, if you had a group of people who are like, I believe red lights mean go, and I'm not going to agree to this, you know, nobody would get in a car. We have to agree that our electricity in this country is 110 volts. In Europe, it's 220 volts. You could not have one state in America be at 220 and all the other states be at 110, right? So there are these functional pieces of unity that, in fact, we do agree to and generally abide by. But then you have all these other layers of social function and policy and behavior that become much more difficult to agree upon and abide by. And so I think that we need to recognize, just like Ceres was talking about, that actually in many ways we do have a great deal of unity already. And then there are ways that we struggle and have conflict. And part of what I hear in your question too, Don, is conflict actually a part of unity? Right? So what if we say that conflict is a part of unity, right? So, you know, evolutionarily, Mark, you said, well, you know, we evolved to be cooperative. Well, that's true, but life also evolved to be somewhat competitive. I mean, mm-hmm. creatures eat each other, right? That's human beings.
Have conflict with groups over groups for resources.
Yeah.
That's natural, just as natural as that group that's trying to take care of each other.
Yeah. And so, you know, what if we understood disunity as part of unity, part of a greater unity?
That's a koan. You just said a kind of a political koan right there.
A political koan. There we go.
We have unity through disunity.
All right. Let's go back to the comments. We've got lots of them. We're going to run out of time.
Gus writes, I saw a meme a couple of weeks ago that was folks in red and blue shirts calling for unity. On their right, folks was in Klan hoods and Confederate flag shirts holding nooses and guns. And the other side was folks wearing rainbow flag shirts and IBPOC people. Unity isn't safe.
Mm-hmm.
Klan hoods. Yeah. CK writes, unity is like faith or hope. Without actions, it's dead.
Well, and once you get into particulars, it becomes a lot more problematic.
Well, and to me, you know, for me, like I tend to be I tend to lean towards functional first. So like to me, mutual aid is a starting point of unity. But a lot of people that think that's the end goal. Once we agree on all this stuff, then we'll share things. So, I mean, I think a lot of this comes down to, like, you can see politics working out that way. Conservative-minded people say, let's make sure we're all the same kind of person, and then we'll share. And that kind of the progressive instinct is maybe a little bit more like, let's all share and then work towards some common things. And so there's this, you can even see these subtle differences in how you approach it and how that causes the source of, it's like a source of conflict itself.
Yeah. Well, and what if people don't deserve to be shared with?
Yeah, that's, yep. And then you get into so many different myths in our society that we hold. Renia says, I see a lot of disunity coming from the need to control others and shape the world according to our ideologies rather than take our ideology as a way to respond to the world as it is. It's like taking a model and trying to make the world like the model and denying reality.
Yeah. It's a famous statement. Gregory Bateson's statement, the map is not the territory, but we get really obsessed with the maps. We forget about the territory. Yeah.
Stephen writes, it seems to me that unity as a concept is introduced when there's been a loss of power. I wish that instead the emphasis was on effective communication and compromise. Without the fairness doctrine and with Fox News, how can we ever be united if we always disagree on basic facts?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that people don't really kind of get this. And you see a great example of this on the positive side in the scientific method, right? So the scientific method in the world of science is basically a unifying methodology, right? And it says, okay, let's agree on this method. And then we have a way of testing things. And as you say, Stephen, we have a way of assessing facts. And we can disagree a lot, actually. I mean, scientists disagree all the time. But we always have a method that we can come back to that unifies us as a way of engaging things. And so I think this is a big another big thing in this conversation of unity is that we never have a conversation about methodology. And you know, in the spiritual life, that's what communal spiritual practice is about, is saying, okay, we're going to disagree on all kinds of things, but there is a methodology in community that we agree to. And so can we have unity around method? And might that not be a better approach than to try to have initial unity on, let's say, policy?
And this whole thing about science brings up, you know, a whole other thing. It's like, even now, scientists don't agree on everything, but you can kind of have reproducible results or predict something and see it happens. And so then there's a general sense like, well, we generally agree on that. But then a newspaper will say, this scientist over here thinks that there are actually aliens among us, right? And so the title for one article would be, scientists disagree over the role of mitochondrial DNA and blah, blah, blah. And then this other one would say, scientists say there are UFOs like hidden among us. And then someone who's watching the news will see, like, see, it's all arbitrary. They can't even agree on anything because right. It's all the same to them.
Yeah.
And so this feeds into this way of like just dismissing any sort of methodology or approach that would be helpful.
Yeah.
Yep. Hey, I love
it. You know, you're skipping all of Bill's enthusiasm here.
Okay.
Well,
styrofoam. Awesomeness. I don't know what this is referring to. So
well, the styrofoam was the communion wafers. I don't know what else he's laughing at.
Yep. And then that they may be one.
Yeah, but I just want to share all the love. Appreciate all the love, everybody, and the joy. We want to be unified around joy.
Joseph writes, yo, I love the reframe y'all are making. Who sets the terms? So good. Thank you very much. Susan says, Dan, you're hilarious today.
Thank you, Susan.
Can just marinate in that a little bit. Takes 8 seconds to focus on it. At least 8 seconds to focus on a positive statement to absorb it instead of a half second for a negative one. So soak it in. Stephen writes, the gay wedding is both in and out of the closet.
There you go.
Schrodinger's closet, yeah, really.
Schrodinger's closet.
Elias writes, hey, hey, from Trumpland, Tennessee. Wow.
Yeah.
Yes, give up power. Amen. Juiced writes, the Dutch Protestant church has some kind of Schrodinger's gay wedding. A heterosexual marriage can become blessed, whereas a gay marriage can become, I'm not going to try these words, also meaning blessed with slightly different status. So there's two kinds of blessednesses in marriage.
Ingesend and gesend. I don't know. Which one do you want? Do you want to be ingesend or gesend?
It's like
a guessing gizzen game.
It's like marriage versus civil ceremony.
I don't know.
They have all these sorts of things. Or with women in church leadership, it's like women can be leading elders or on the board, but they can't be pastors. And so there's these ways of trying to like let's get as close as we can without ever fully acknowledging. Daniel writes, I've often wondered about how the visible disunity of Protestantism, denominations and even non-denominational communities breaking off from each other, is related historically to the rise of the nation state in the 16th century, Luther, Calvin, etc., and also the rise of capitalism, i.e. church shopping and the marketplace based on individual choice and taste. I mean, we could have a whole episode of that about
good,
that one.
Good wonderings. Those are all related. Yeah.
Yeah. And it gets really messy.
Yeah.
Michelle writes, yes, acknowledge rather than affirm. Elias writes, do you fellas think that maybe if we focus less on unity and dogma and more on practice and conduct? And if so, how do we head in that direction?
Yeah, and that's that methodology piece. And to me, that's the only way ultimately that you start to get at any sort of meaningful unity. Because if you want to start with the dogma, the doctrine, the statements of faith, whatever, I mean, you're just doomed.
Well, it gets to the whole statement of, like, I don't even think we understand the development of creeds very well, because now we look back as it's just people having ideological debates. It came out of practice and then having forms of worship, and they had to know what to say during our forms of worship. And so creeds kind of develop out of this place, and then it gets all messy and there's power and mess involved.
Well, I was going to say, there's been a lot of politics involved in creating that. Yeah.
Yep. At least at the very beginning, the stuff we see in the New Testament is arguments that really are about practical stuff, even though they may not see practical now. And there's no perfect way to do this, but they were grappling, like, who can Gentiles even be included? What about meat sacrifice to idols? Like, those are might seem dumb to us now, but those are incredibly.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like having the anarchist community talking about whether or not they're going to have meat.
Right.
Like, it's very practical, the things that are, you know, those are things worth struggling about.
No.
CK writes, is unity just a buzzword for obedience?
Well, sure, right. It can be. Yep.
Elias writes, if we focused on conduct and practice, that would be on a better path. Yeah. Yep. I think generally speaking, that's true. Renia writes, I see marriage as turning something unholy into something holy. Outside of marriage, any sex at all is considered immoral. But once there's marriage, it becomes a union blessed by God. Thus, it's not the gender of the couple that makes the union holy, but the marriage between the two.
A lot to talk about there. That 6 minutes late, we don't have time, but
lots of interesting tidbits in there. Yeah. Sure. Catherine writes, I feel like the concept of unity is vague and often misused, but mutual care and responsibility, respect for some degree of ideological diversity and conflict, while also respecting boundaries grounded in the kind of care that recognizes power dynamics, are something to actually aspire to. Yes.
Yeah.
And even within all those things, there's plenty of room for conflict.
Yeah.
But at least we should set the terms of, we should be honest about what we're going for, what the terms are, and like, and not, there's so much deception involved in different groups trying to go for unity that's what upsets me more than almost anything else.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh man, that's so on point, but so effed up. You could be talking about all sorts of things. I don't know if
you're... Yeah.
Ellen writes, I think of unity in terms of the body. If I eat this food, does the food become part of this body? If so, what does pooping mean? Is whatever is in the GI tract part of the body just because it's inside of me? Oh my God, you're getting philosophical on us, Ellen.
Yep.
Philosophy and poop are two of my favorite things. Elias writes, yeah, come to the table.
So one great way of, you know, turning Ellen's comment completely on its head, right, and this gets back to the unity that already exists, is that now with all of the interest in the microbiome, you know, the bacteria that live in our gut, there are a lot of people that are talking about the fact that all that humans are is simply a carrying case for bacteria, like that we're not really these separate special things. We're just this big giant meat sack for bacteria so that they can move around.
Yeah, we're just a tiny ecosystem.
Yeah, so there you go.
Michelle writes, unity on method rather than unity on polity or policy.
Yeah.
I mean, there's never a hard line between those two, but yeah, I think having a way to measure and a set of terms and ways of engaging makes sense. Benjamin writes, I love this conversation. Great reframe on unity with whom and splitting with whom. I have taken to saying that unity has become an idol and that we end up sacrificing human lives to satisfy its demands. Yes, mm-hmm. Unity's the way we think about it is in service to the principalities and powers.
Yeah.
Benjamin also writes, I also wonder if you've engaged with Chantal Mouffe. Mouffet, I don't know how to pronounce that name, and Ernest Laclau's work on populism and their critiques of consensus politics. I have not, but now I'm curious because I think...
Good. Gus, get on it. Get some of that stuff in our library.
I generally like the idea of consensus being a way of approaching things, but I lived in a consensus-based community for a long time, and it's not perfect at all. Ceres writes, even if we shared similar values and methods, we would still end up with differences, which is not a bad thing, biodiversity.
Right. Yeah, no, and that's the thing, is that, and again, getting back to the science example, and so if you have some scientist that says aliens exist, and every other scientist can go, you're a nut job, and you say, well, let's apply the method and figure it out, right? And so, yeah, you can have an incredible amount of differences, disagreements, different perspectives, but you have this uniting methodology that is able to bring the focus back to some way that everybody can get involved.
Which is, and it's complex because methodologies are usually based upon ideological assumptions. Yes. So it's like it just keeps going forever. It's like a Mobius strip of.
All right. Speaking of going forever, we can't go forever. So
last comments.
Wrap it up.
Let's end with Colin. Anyone who would plow blindly into the political unity should look up whatever happened to the United Front Party in the Spanish Civil War. Okay. That's a little historical tidbit. I would love to go into the Spanish Civil War, but just worth looking into.
Yeah.
There's still lots of beefs living to this day because of that.
Yeah. All righty. Well, thanks so much, everybody. Really appreciate it. Here, let's end with Elias's very nice compliment here at the bottom.
Okay. This is the only church I got right now, thanks to all here.
Yeah. All right. So thank you all. Love you. See you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
Bye.